Well, we hope you've had fun with the Barone family as we've kind of been wading through issues of what it means to be married. And today's kind of the last day we're going to be talking about this for a while. For those of you who've been coming, have been enjoying it, woohoo, I'm glad. For those of you who have been coming going, when is he going to get done with this? Today's the day. So there you go. But we've been kind of talking about this. I felt like it's important, and it will always be important for us as a church to periodically have messages and times where we focus on family. Because I just, for us as a church, family is a real core value. It's something that we place a high value on. And it's also something for our culture, our community, that is a big deal. And there's a lot of things that we can say about that. One is that if we can see God work in the families in our church and build strong families here, it will really give us a very strong witness to the culture we live in. This also, as you've waded through and wrestled through this, hopefully, if you've been here for the messages or even caught a few of them, and if they're all out online if you want to go listen to them, especially the last couple weeks. If you missed those, you don't want to miss those, right? Hopefully, it will help us as a people be able to answer the struggles and the questions that people in our culture will have. As we live in a very family-oriented community, almost 80% of the households in Eureka are married families or married couples. And we live in a world where people aren't real sure what to do with marriage, and there's a lot of hurt and a lot of anguish. There's a lot of people who are breaking up and their struggles. I told you a couple times that as I've been doing this series, I keep hearing about people that I've known and have loved or have been close to in my life that all of a sudden, man, this whole issue is crashing and burning. I'd heard about another guy that I knew and really kind of delved into it this week, a guy that I really respected and had a lot of faith in, who'd been preaching and speaking to teenagers and traveling all over the country. And if finally came out, this dude has been having an affair since like the 80s. And I'm just like, holy cow, how does a guy stand up here and do that? How does he live with that conflict in his life? But as I did that, I began to read a lot of blogs and think, and I realized, man, the fact that his family and his marriage wasn't strong now is having ripples just all over the place. And I just really hope that we'll have strong families and strong marriages and people who love each other and love Jesus and who are doing this together. So we've kind of gone through, this is week 10 of a series called Everybody Loves Marriage. And, we hope everybody does. If you're here and you're not married, I hope that this series has built some things into your life so that you will wait for and have God's best. And if you are married, I hope that this really has been a time that's renewed your relationship, that you and your husband, you and your wife are closer to one another, that maybe you kiss more and flirt more, and that there's just more resolve to be what God calls you to be and chose you to be in marriage. Marriage is a great thing. We've come a long way. We talked about the fact that our relationship with our spouse is not just about that, but that this, my relationship with my wife, or she's out there, I can kind of point towards where she is really about that. That marriage, in a very real way, was given by God to picture the gospel and to be a path to the gospel. It's an image on earth where people look at a marriage, two people who are committed to one another, who stay together, and they can see that this is the same sort of thing that we do with God. We choose Jesus as our one and only, and we stay with him, and he stays with us. But it's also a path to it, that as I experience marriage, I figure out daily that I am really fallen and really in need of grace, but I have somebody who loves me in spite of me. Who, the more she knows me, the more she loves me, and it makes less sense every day, right? And so marriage is a path to the gospel. It shows me God's love. And I feel more loved by God sometimes when I am loved by my wife than maybe any other way. And so God gave us marriage for that. We talked about the fact that marriage is a safe place to be naked. In Genesis chapter 2, it talks about Adam and Eve, and it talks about that, and that's more than what it sounds like. It's really a place where the more I am myself, the more loved I am, and that's a beautiful thing, and that's what you ought to get in marriage, is a safe place for you to really be transparent and real and yourself, and in the midst of that, be loved anyway. We talked about the fact that it's important for us to figure out our spouse's love language. How do they communicate and receive love? And we need to work hard as couples to find that and then speak that love language often. And I hope that you've been challenged to do that. And then we talked about the fact that God in the Bible has been very clear about delineating roles in marriage, and that God has called men and women to fulfill their role. Every marriage will look different, but there's some common things. And men are called to really to be the spiritual leaders in the home. I just want to challenge you guys to step up and do that. And that women are challenged to be the heart of the home and to be just the lifeblood of it. And there's a lot of good stuff there. Be challenged by that. We talked about a lot of issues. We talked about finances. We talked about communication and forgiveness and all those sort of things. And the last 2 weeks, we talked about the big hard one to talk about in church, and we talked about sex and the fact that is a big key issue in the context of marriage, and that even in that God has called that level of intimacy is something that draws us to something greater. And that's what I really hope when the day's settled and the series is over, what I really hope will happen is that we will begin to realize that everything in life is really about Jesus. And as I live my life with my wife, I grow closer to her, I love her more. As I do that God will work in my life to show me what it is to know him and trust him and have a relationship with him. And so, you know, everybody wants to have the fairy tale. We love Cinderella. We love, the Princess Bride. Well, guys are kind of like, ooh, gross. But anyway, girls like the Princess Bride, and we love all these, you know, beautiful stories, Pretty Woman, you know, and all these stories where the girl is over here and the guy's over here, and there's this big issue that keeps them apart, but somehow they work it out, and, you know, it's just perfect. We watched a couple movies this last week that kind of had that as its theme, and it was really fun to cuddle up next to my wife and watch cute fairy tale kind of movies where, you know, you got the guy and the girl, and they like each other, but it's not working out. But then they live happily ever after. And, you know, movies are great because they have ending credits, and you see it, and everybody's happy, and you think that's the rest of life. And then you stood on an altar on your wedding day thinking, this is the way it's going to work for me, right? I'm going to have the fairy tale. It's not quite like that. There are no rolling credits, which imply life is great from here on out, are there? In fact, I got a press release this week about Prince Charming and Cinderella saying that they've split up. Reports from the Enchanted Forest are claiming that Cinderella and Prince Charming have parted ways due to irreconcilable differences. After a number of months of trying to work things out, Cinderella has contacted a divorce lawyer and is seeking half of Prince Charming's kingdom. She stated, "Of course, I appreciate that wonderful first kiss, but things aren't so hot anymore." Sources report that Cinderella has been upset with the prince because he spends so much time away from home and hasn't been at an important part of her life. "I thought that we had a fairy tale marriage, but I guess I was wrong." There have also been reports of infidelity with Prince Charming, specifically with the witch's daughter. Maybe there's something about the naughty girl image that he's drawn to after Cinderella. Prince Charming has not issued a statement, but sources close to him share that he fell out of love with Cinderella when she put on the excess weight and became depressed. You know, it's not always the fairy tale, and sometimes we strive for that, and we have this image of what that ought to be in our minds, but as we pursue it, it doesn't quite work out. There's things that are messy and dirty, and there's all kinds of great stuff about fairy tales, and we love them because we hope our lives to turn out. Like, every fairy tale has a once upon a time. That's kind of how it begins. You have this beginning of a fairy tale once upon a time, and we all have that. Heidi and I, our once upon a time kind of looks like this. We met in college when I was going to Missouri Baptist, and we were going there. The first time I ever heard her name is when somebody showed up with a Ted Drews concrete and said, "This is for Heidi Lahr." And I said, "I'm not really sure who Heidi Lahr is, but if you don't find her, I will eat her concrete. I have no problem with that." And they never did. So the first time I ever heard her name was when I got a Ted Drews concrete that she was supposed to get, which I ate it, and about 5 minutes after that, she showed up, but it was long gone, and I ditched it. I was out of there. I didn't want her looking for me, wondering where her concrete went. And so, but then we met and kind of started hanging out with the same group of friends, and God brought us together, and we started dating. And the crazy thing is, I wasn't you know, we weren't real serious and real into this thing, but the first time I ever took her to my house, we weren't even dating yet, but the first time I took her to my house, we were doing laundry. I mean, I live 15 minutes away from MOBAP. She had laundry. This is easy. We'll go do laundry at my house. My mom walked in, met her, and then walked into the other room and looked at my dad and said, "That is the girl Mike's going to marry." How she knew that, I don't know, but it worked out that way. And so finally, I proposed to her on the greatest place a guy can propose. It was pouring rain. It was ridiculously nasty that day. And I took her out, are you ready for this, to the pitcher's mound at Brentwood Baseball Park. How romantic is that, okay? I was an athlete. I thought it was cool. I look back on it thinking, what was I thinking? But she said yes. Amazingly, she said yes. And so, you know, we decided to get married. We had a pretty long engagement, but came to the wedding day, man, and we really worked hard at having everything perfect. We had red roses everywhere, and we had, you know, the worship center of that church decorated just right. And, you know, we were just planning for this perfect wedding. And so everything was put in order. The night before we got married, the guy who married us in the rehearsal kind of walked through everything. We kept asking, what happens if this happens? He said, the wedding goes on. What happens if this happens? The wedding. And finally he stood up and said, listen, I don't care if somebody dies. The wedding goes on. Well, the next day the wedding starts and we're kind of like, okay, this is cool and it's all beautiful. And I'll never forget when the door opened and Heidi walked in. I mean, it's an enthralling moment that is etched on my memory forever. But she came down, I got a little teary-eyed and got a little emotional. We came up on the platform and he went through his little sermon to us and all this kind of stuff. We had like 8 songs. I don't know what we were thinking. We thought everybody was really there to see us. And the truth was everybody was there to get cake and endure the half an hour they thought they were going to be with us. We made them stand through an hour and 15 minutes of a wedding. Which now, if I do a wedding that's an hour and 15 minutes, I'm like, you guys are nuts. This is crazy. You don't want to do this. People want to get in, get out, and get on with their day, okay? They're here because they love you. Please don't annoy them. But we did. We annoyed everybody. We had this long wedding. And as part of the wedding, we decided to have my uncle sing the Lord's Prayer while we did the little kneeling bench, okay? And so this was back in the day where that was kind of cool. They're kind of out now. And, you know, then it went through the whole unity candle thing and now everybody doesn't like unity candles, and we're coming up with all kinds of other ideas. But we had a kneeling bench, and so Heidi and I knelt down, and we were having this tender moment. My uncle's over here singing the longest rendition of the Lord's Prayer ever. It was like, "Our Father." This was the pace of it. I'm not making this up, okay? This is the pace of it. He is singing the Lord's Prayer, and while he's over here singing this long, like 18-minute version of the Lord's Prayer song, okay, we had our bridesmaids and groommen walk together, right? They came down the aisle, and then they stood together on the platform. You know, a lot of times they'll come, and you'll have the bridesmaids over here, groomsmen over here, or actually got it backwards. But anyway, there you go. But we decided to have them stand together, which was really a God thing. We didn't understand at the time. It was just kind of how we wanted it. But this was providence. This was God's purpose and plan for that day. Because little did we know that the largest girl on stage, I hope she never listens to this, but anyway, the largest girl on that stage that day would look at her groomsmen. She's here, and the groomsman is right here. She would look at her groomsmen and utter these words. We have it on video. You can read her lips. She looks at her groomsmen and says, "I think I'm going to pass out." Now, ladies, if you're ever in a wedding, you get a little queasy and you think you're going to fall towards the guy who's standing next to you. She did not do this. She looks at the guy, says, "I think I'm going to pass out." My uncle's over here still, "Richard in heaven." He's still going on, right? She looks at him, says, "I think I'm going to pass out," and then falls the other way. She hits the ground and bounces. I'm not making this up. She bounces, boom, boom. And I look at her, and her eyes are literally rolling around in her head. And I remembered what the guy who was marrying us said the day before. I don't care if somebody dies. I looked at Heidi and said, "Do we take him literally?" Because for a second, we thought, oh my gosh, this girl is like seriously in trouble. Well, the guy who was doing the marriage walked back. He kind of grabbed her by the arm. The guy who was walking with her had her by the arm, and when she fell, he just held her hand and stared at her while she laid on the ground. If I'd ever taken the time to send this America's Funniest Home Videos, We'd have made $10,000. Anyway, he's holding her hand. She's laying on the ground, kind of just laying there. We're like, I don't know what to do. And so she starts to kind of come back. And he does what any manly man would do. He reaches down, scoops her up, and walked her out. And there was like boom, picked her up like this and carries her out of the worship center. Meanwhile, my uncle's about a third of the way through the song. He is still singing. This is true as can be. He is still singing. He finally gets done. Everybody's back here. We have this empty space here that represents the girl who just passed out. Now, nobody's going to remember anything about the wedding except this girl passed out. That's it. Okay, that's all that's going to be remembered from this day. The song gets over, and the guy who married us, his name was Kerry, turned around and looked at us, and the expression on his face was phenomenal because he went, "Hey, amen." And that is how our once upon a time began. We had a girl pass out in our wedding. You know, you meet your husband, your wife, and once upon a time, and you kind of get things over, going, and you want to have a fairy tale. But you know what? Every fairy tale is going to have some dragons. And it's how you deal with those dragons in life. Some of those dragons are caused by our own sinfulness and the fact that we're fallen people who struggle. Some of those dragons come from without. Some, you know, you may encounter dragons in your marriage of the fact that you struggle financially, or you may have some incredible illness that turns your marriage into something that you never really imagined it would be. You may have kids that struggle, or that, who knows, okay? There are dragons in every marriage. And how you deal with those dragons is going to say a lot about whether or not you have a happily ever after. But you know, every marriage has dragons. And to be honest, you may end up like Shrek and Fiona. The truth is you married, you looked like, you know, Prince Charming and Cinderella. But about 10 years into it, now you look like Shrek and Fiona, a couple ogres where, you know, you're green and hairy guys and you don't smell so good. And, you know, Fiona has put on a few pounds and doesn't quite look like. But that this is part of the journey of loving each other. No matter what happens, that's why I love those movies, to be honest with you. I actually am a really big Shrek fan because of the relationship those two have all the way through it. But, you know, the question is, will it end happily ever after? Is the marriage going to survive and be all that God intended it to be, a Christ-centered covenant, two people pursuing the same thing together, marriage? Or is there going to become a point in time where maybe it doesn't work out so well? It's kind of like this story I heard about this elderly couple who went to a wedding one day, and they came home, and you know, she kind of sat down next to him on the swing, and they were swinging, just kind of sipping an iced tea, and she looked at him and she said, "You know, when we were younger, you used to take time out to hold my hand." And he felt kind of guilty, but also kind of like, oh, this is kind of sweet, and so he reached over and held her hand. And they kept swinging, sipping on their iced tea, and she said, "You know, when we were younger, you used to take time out to kiss me." And so he reached over and gave her a sweet little kiss on the cheek, kind of felt guilty, but it also was very, you know, it was sweet and romantic. And they're swinging, and he kind of kissed her on the cheek. He said, "You know, when we were younger, you used to take time to nibble on my neck." And they're still swinging, and he kind of stopped, and he got up and walked away. And she said, "Well, what was it? Did I make you mad, or did I hurt your feelings?" He said, "No, I got to go get my teeth." You know, we're looking for a happily ever after. That is an image of all God wants, and growing old together is a beautiful thing. But how do we get there? Well, Jesus talked about this with some people. If you have your Bible, turn to the book of Mark. The book of Mark chapter 10, verses 2 through 12. If you don't have a Bible at the end of our row, we'd love for you to take one of those, read out of that Bible. And that Bible this morning will be on page 721. And we're going to talk about marriage and the idea of happily ever after, staying in it, and how it works. And I just want to show you some things Jesus says about this, because really, when the day is over, the best place to go is to the Bible and to Jesus to figure anything about life out. And Jesus is having a conversation with some people who are trying to trip him up on this issue of marriage. And as he talks to them, he really lays out God's plan, God's design for happily ever after. And so chapter 10, we'll begin with verse 1 here. It says, "And he left there and went to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And crowds gathered to him again. And again, as was his custom, he taught them. This was kind of Jesus' ministry. Everywhere he went, people followed him, and he was teaching. But everywhere he went, there was also some of the people in the crowd who didn't like him, who didn't like his teaching, didn't like the fact that he was kind of messing with their power. He kind of spoke to some of the religious issues that they tried to get people to do. And Jesus kind of said, listen, it's not about being a legalist. It's not about keeping a set of rules. It's about knowing God and loving him and growing with him. But they liked the rules because they could kind of say, well, I keep the rules and so I'm cool. And so the Pharisees were one of those groups that kind of followed him around. And everywhere he went, they were trying to catch him and trip him up. And verse 2 says, the Pharisees came up, and in order to test him, they asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Now, it says they wanted to test him. The idea is that they were really trying to tempt him to put him in a situation where he had no good answer. There was nothing he could say. And what's interesting about this situation is that he is in a region that was governed by a guy named Herod Antipas. Herod was kind of a vile, weird kind of guy, and he decided that he really liked and had the hots for his brother's wife. And so he had his brother in prison and stole his wife. And they started hanging out and living together and having a relationship together. And Jesus' earthly cousin, a guy named John, stood up and said, this is not God's plan. This is not right. You can't do this. This is not what God's best is. And he was a really popular preacher and speaker, John was, and people really followed him. So Herod got kind of afraid of John. He didn't know what to do because he couldn't keep John, you know, kind of telling everybody and preaching what Herod's doing is wrong. But the flip side of it is that he couldn't really deal with them, because if he'd like put John in prison or did anything like that with him, the people would kind of maybe have a riot and get mad at Herod, and he was kind of in a hard spot. But finally, his wife kind of conned him in, actually using his stepdaughter as a way to do it. Herod's stepdaughter come in and do an erotic dance, and it got Herod all riled up and turned on, and he said, oh, I'll do anything for you. And her response was, well, then I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And he was kind of in a hard place because he'd made that promise in front of everybody, and to appease this relationship, he actually had John the Baptist, John, executed, Jesus' cousin. And so now the Pharisees are thinking, man, if we can get Jesus to really rail on marriage, if we can get him to really kind of do the same thing John did, we won't have to deal with him. Herod will get him. And so they were testing him, and they asked him, you know, what about divorce? Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Well, there's also another issue in that in the Jews, there were two kind of camps. There was one teacher who said, listen, there's only one reason a man can leave his wife, and that reason is because if she's unfaithful to him. If she has a sexual relationship outside the marriage, he can divorce her and leave. The other camp said, no, it doesn't matter anything that she does. If she just annoys him and gets, he can give her a certificate of divorce and send her away. Either way is fine. And there's actually this debate going on about when is it okay for a husband to divorce his wife? And so as they're kind of dealing with this, they try to draw Jesus into this argument, figuring whichever side he chooses, he'll alienate half the crowd. Because I'm sure, you know, there were a bunch of people in this crowd that were following him who were divorced, who'd gone through this, or who were, you know, with a woman that they didn't really like. Now, ladies, I got to be honest, in this culture, women couldn't leave their husbands. That would get you executed. But men could leave their wives really for any reason, but there was a debate. And so there were some who probably were with a woman they didn't like, and they were thinking about leaving, and if Jesus kind of spoke to that, it might tick them off. There were others who were like, no, we need to stand strong. We need to have family values and vote Republican and do all that. We want Jesus on our side, and if Jesus didn't speak to their side, and that's kind of where the church is a lot of times. Trying to figure out how to speak into this issue is really difficult, and we need the wisdom of God because we need to have grace and understand that people are sinful, fallen, and there are struggles, but at the same time, we need to hold up a standard, but we don't need to ever choose sides. But they put Jesus in this situation where it was all about, you know, a certain set of things, and they thought they had him in a pickle where if he didn't answer just right, and Jesus' response in verse 3 said, he answered them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of divorce and to send her away. They were referring to part of the Jewish law in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 24. And in Deuteronomy chapter 24, what happens is that Moses is writing about divorce. And this is what he basically says. He says, listen, if a man divorces his wife and he doesn't have unfaithfulness as a grounds to that, he needs to give her a certificate of divorce that exonerates her from guilt. That says, listen, if I'm going to leave you, at least I'm going to give you something in your hands that shows I wasn't at fault in this. And it goes on to say, and then if another man marries her, and if that man either dies or he divorces her, she's not allowed to then to go back and marry the first husband again, because that just would be weird. Okay, that's basically what it says. And Jesus says, what did Moses command you? They answered right. They said, Moses didn't command anything. He permitted. He permitted people to divorce. But if you really read the text in Deuteronomy, God is not permitting anything. What God is doing is he is protecting innocent women. That's all he is doing in Deuteronomy, because he knows that men are pigs and they will leave their wife for the younger woman, or the he knows that they're going to treat women with a sinful heart. And what God is doing is he's putting something into the law that says, if you're going to do this, you're at least not going to put her in a situation where she'll be homeless and destitute and hopeless the rest of her life because people think she cheated on you when she didn't. That's what's going on in Deuteronomy 24. And so Jesus, having this conversation, says, what did Moses command you? And they said, well, he didn't command anything. He permitted us, permitted divorce. To write a He permitted them to write a certificate of divorce and send them away. Jesus said to them, verse 5, because of your hardness of heart, he wrote you this commandment. But from the beginning of creation, God has made them male and female. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold to his wife, and they will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. What a great text. Jesus does not take them to Deuteronomy. He takes them back to the beginning of time and creation. And he says, listen, yes, Moses wrote this because he knew that you were going to be hard-hearted. Meaning he knew, God knew that there would be some among you who would rebel against God's purpose, would say, I don't care what God says, I'm doing my own thing. I'm going to build my own happiness. I'm going to do what makes me feel good. I'm not going to pursue God. I'm going to pursue myself. And because of the hard-heartedness of people, we see that, see it in divorce situations all the time. Where somebody has struggled in the marriage, and you can look them in the eye and say, this is not God's will for you. And they will say, I know, but I don't care. I love her. I know, but I don't care. I love him. And it just wrecks everything. And instead of appealing to Moses, Jesus appeals to creation, says, from the beginning of time. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but if you've been following us, and you've looked at all the scriptures, and in fact, we have a reading list. I'd love for you to pick it up. It has all the books that I used in my study, but it also has a lot of scriptures that we used in this sermon series, and you can go do your own study of marriage. You will find that almost every time a New Testament writer appeals to the issue of marriage and tries to lay out God's plan for marriage, they all take us back to Genesis chapter 2 and the creation of man and woman. They all take us back to the beginning to show us God's design from the beginning was the fact that he made them male and female, different but equal. He brought them into this one flesh relationship for a lifetime. And what God has put together, no human should try to break apart. And that's the fairy tale. That is the fairy tale. The fairy tale is not the fact that there's no dragons and everything's perfect. The fairy tale is when two people say, man, I'm in this with you. I know we go through hard times, but for life, I'm going to allow our relationship to be a picture of the gospel and a path to the gospel, and I'm never letting that go. And that's why I tell Heidi all the time, if you ever leave me, I'm going with you. This is what marriage is about. It is about through good and bad, tough and great, and there should be a balance of both. But even if God brings you to the point where it is so hard, it's impossible, his plan, his way of giving grace into your life and giving you joy, not just happiness, but joy, contentment, peace, is by honoring the fact that God brought you together. You're like, but I married the wrong woman. Not if you're married. She's the right woman for you now. And for you to stay with that and to love that person sacrificially, to love that man, to love that woman sacrificially, and to give yourself away to that person. And as you do that, you become more like Jesus every step of the way. That is the fairy tale. And that is why when, you know, our culture, it, you know, lifts up all these celebrity marriages. And man, anytime any two Hollywood people get together, they become the next Cinderella and Prince Charming that we parade on every magazine. We have all kinds of, you know, you walk down the aisle of the supermarket and there's 18 magazines with the same two people on them. And then 6 months later, they're not together, or a year later, what was it, about 2 years ago, one of these celebrity couples decided that for a year, we're going to just have all the cameras in the house. We're going to let everybody in and see how wonderful our marriage is. And it didn't last but a year and a half. But for some reason, our culture is going, but we want the fairy tale. We keep looking for this. And what I want us to be is a church full of people who are either married or pursuing marriage, who do it God's way. And all of a sudden, people start going, I see the magazines, but I really am more drawn to what happens there. That's a beautiful thing. And so that's my hope for us. And so just kind of listening to Jesus' kind of words and talking about fairy tales, I just kind of want to close this by talking about a few things real quick. And then we're going to do something I hope is kind of cool. But talking about a few things real quick that will challenge you, that as you're wading through this, the dragons and trying to figure out happily ever after, and you're living life as a couple ogres now, some things maybe, these are kind of practical, but that will challenge you to forge this thing together and never give up. Let me just give you some thoughts. And the first one is this, and that this is kind of the theme of the whole series, okay, is that you two need to pursue Jesus together. That's really the heart of a strong marriage. Two people who are both pursuing Jesus, but now I choose to do it with you. It's not two people in the same home who are kind of on their own path, figuring out their own thing, but we're just kind of in a partnership. Marriage, when it's strong, is two people who are pursuing Jesus but doing it together. There's a lot of ways that can happen in your life. I don't think any two people, it's going to look the same. Somebody will stand up and say, you need to have a daily devotion with each other. And for some people, that is a great thing. For other people, that may not be the best way to pursue Jesus together. I think I told you this before. I bought like 6 couples devotional Bibles, and we've gotten through number 2 all 6 times, and I don't think we've made it to number 3 in any of the books, right? Just because that idea, our lives are just kind of weird, and neither of us are morning people, and the evening is crazy. But there's other ways that we can talk about the God and the things of God that does fit with our family. But for some of you, it may be, you know, that you literally forge time daily and sit down and read the Bible and pray together. I do think being in the scriptures together is important. And guys, I would encourage you to take the lead of that. And if you're like, but I don't even read the Bible myself, that's cool, no big deal. But I would encourage you to find a way, to open the Bible and read that with your wife, and just challenge her with it and speak into her heart and discuss things. And, you know, you're like, well, I don't know everything. Well, this is a good way for you to struggle with some of those issues and become kind of the spiritual leader of your home, which is one of the biblical admonitions. That you pastor your home. I just think that's a big deal. I'll tell you the way for us that it leaps the most. In fact, I will tell you when my wife is sexiest. Are you nervous? She is now. My wife is sexiest when she's got a World Changers tool belt around her waist. Her face is dirty. Her hair's in a ponytail, and she's got a hammer in her hand, and she's doing missions with me. That's my favorite time to be with my wife. It pained me to let you guys go to World Changers this week and not go. And it pained me more that I couldn't go with her. There have been several mission trips where we've gone together and we actually ended up working on the same house or the same church building together. And I love that. Not just because I'm working with her. I mean, that's part of it. But what really does it is the fact that we're pursuing Jesus together. I would encourage you, if you've never done this, to find a mission project, something where you are serving God and serving people, and go do it with your wife, guys. It'll blow your mind away. It will change your relationship. It'll turn it upside down. It will just really make things incredible. But here's my point. Whatever that is, you two, you and your wife, you and your husband, pursue Jesus together. That will be the glue that makes you one flesh and holds it all together. Good times and bad makes it work. All right, second thing is this. Be intentional about renewal. I just want to challenge you that it is so important that you just don't drift. Guys, if we put as much effort in tuning up our marriage as we did in tuning up our car or in improving our golf swing, it wouldn't be a big deal. Ladies, if you put as much effort into pouring love into your husband as you did making sure your house was perfect, you're like, some of you guys are like, well, now wait a minute, you're meddling now, gone too far. Listen, be intentional. Set aside time to sit down and walk through your struggles and talk about issues. It's amazing when I've counseled couples how many of them have been married for 10, 15 years and they've never actually sat down, pulled out a sheet of paper and said, why are we struggling? They just kind of drift in life, keep going, keep going, keep going, and it's not working. They don't know why, but they never sit down, look at each other in the eye and say, why? What do we need to adjust? How do we need to tune this up and make it work? And then 15 years from then, they're in a counselor's office and they don't even know each other anymore. And this really shows up with people who have kids and they've kind of, what held it together and gave them any cause to be together was the kids. But now the youngest kid graduates and goes to high school or goes away to college. They get home from taking the kid to college. They sit down at the dinner table, look across the table and go, who are you? I'm not sure I really know you. That is a tragedy. Be intentional about spending specific times getting away and honing your marriage, working on it, tuning it up. I just think it's important at least once a year that that is part of who you are. A third thing is keep dating. You know, when you meet your wife, your girl, and you start going and you're dating her, and it's all like, we're close, we're good, and you take her to dinner, and you take her to a movie, or you take and you work at dates, and then all of a sudden you get married, and about 6 months into the marriage, the next thing you know is that you realize we haven't gone out. All we do is hang around the house. And then you get kids and it just compounds that thing. Guys, at least once a month you ought to take your wife out on a date. And at least half of those times it should be a date that you plan. Now I'll say that women, it's a good idea for you to plan them too, but I just think take the lead in this. Your wives will really love it. I'll be honest. They will. If you did that project, and I hope you've done most of the projects. Have you guys done some of the projects? Is that a yes or a no? Wow. Yes. That's all the ladies who had the project from last week and they weren't sure what to do with it. But anyway, you know, the projects were designed to get you closer and kind of get you hanging out and doing it. And one of those was to take your wife out on a date. I hope you did that. Or I hope you planned one. Maybe you haven't done it yet, but you got it planned. But whatever it is, date each other. Don't forget to do that. Don't forget to spend time like that. Hey, here's the last thing I'll tell you is the fact that you need to face your dragons with praise. You need to realize that you are not the answer to the dragons in your life. Jesus is. And you need to face them knowing that he's the solution. I could say a lot about that, but I'll just kind of leave that there because I want to end with a story that we're going to do something kind of cool. We all want the fairy tale, but what is that? I want to tell you my favorite fairy tale, and I'm going to warn you right now, I will not make it through this story without crying, okay? I'm going to tell you that right up front because you don't think I'm just weird. But I get emotional every time I think about this because this is what I want. I don't want it to happen like this, but I want my love for my wife to be like Robertson McQuilkin. He was the president of Columbia, what is now Columbia International University. It was Columbia Bible College at the time all this happened. And he was well-known in the theological world. He'd written a lot of books. He had a speaking circuit that took him all over the world. And she also was very involved. She was actually on a weekly radio program with a group of ladies where they kind of did a call-in thing about issues for women, and they kind of lived this deal. And so in the midst of all this, this was their life, was kind of being known. But he started noticing that she was forgetting things. She was in her 50s, very young for stuff like this. But she started forgetting things and struggling things. 3 years later, they went to a doctor and had confirmed what they had started fearing, that she was suffering from Alzheimer's disease. And already this began to be a struggle for him. He wasn't sure what to do. When he would leave, often she would panic. When he would go on trips, he left a nurse at home. She would really get frustrated and disoriented and violent sometimes, and it kind of came on very quick, some of the early struggles with it. And he wasn't sure what to do. When he'd go to work at his job, he would take her with him, but sometimes that became kind of too much, and he would work there. And as he was going around speaking, they actually went to two cities. The first time, they went to Tokyo. I've never been to Tokyo, but they say it's just a crazy city, and she actually left the hotel room and got lost in Tokyo, and she wouldn't have remembered how to get back to her room. It was only the fact that a policeman found her, and he had been frantically searching for her. They brought her back to the room, and then they were in London, and she literally got lost and panicked and got terrified, and he lost her for several hours, only to come back and with her sitting in the lobby of the hotel laughing with a group of people. But it scared the fire out of him. And he began to realize that he had to make a very difficult decision, the decision of, do I put her in a home where she can get care, or do I care for her? And his decision was that I stood on a platform and said, for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, till death do us part. And he made a decision, I am never going to put Muriel, my wife, in a home. And he left speaking all over the world, and he resigned his position at Columbia Bible College as the president of this college. And people talked to him. They said, listen, it's noble to put her in a home, to let somebody who can care for her, care for her. And his response was, I can't do that. He'd met with the faculty, and he wrote a letter to the people who were involved with this college. And this is the letter. He said this. 22 years is a long time. But then again, it can be shorter than one anticipates. How do you say goodbye to friends you do not wish to leave? The decision to come to Columbia was the most difficult I had to make. The decision to leave 22 years later, though painful, was one of the easiest. It was almost as if God engineered the circumstances so that I had no alternatives. Let me explain. My dear wife, Muriel, had been failing mental health for about 12 years. So far, I've been able to carry both her ever-growing needs and my leadership responsibility at Columbia. But recently, it has become apparent that Muriel is contented most of the time she is with me, and almost none of the time I am away from her. It's not just discontent. She's filled with fear, even terror, that she has lost me and always goes in search of me when I leave home. So it is clear to me that she needs me full-time now. Perhaps it would help you understand if I shared with you what I shared in chapel at the time of the announcement of my resignation. The decision was made in a way 42 years ago when I promised to care for Muriel in sickness and in health, to death do us part. So as I told the students and faculty, as a man of my word, integrity has something to do with it, but so does fairness. She's cared for me fully and sacrificially all these years. If I cared for her for the next 40 years, I would not be out of her debt. Duty, however, can be a grim and stoic, but there is more. I love Muriel. She is a delight to me. Her childlike dependence and confidence in me, her warm love, occasional flashes of wit I used to relish so, her happy spirit, and tough resilience in the face of her continual distressing frustration. I have to care for her. I get to. It's a high honor to care for such a wonderful person. This book is called A Promise Kept by Robertson McQuilkin. It's the story. Her illness, her fight with Alzheimer, went over 25 years, of which he spent the next 25 years of his life doing one thing, caring for his wife as she went from unable to use her arms and legs to becoming unable to speak in sentences but be able to say words. And the words one phrase she was able to say for years when she couldn't say anything else was, I love you. But she eventually became so debilitated where she basically was in a bed all day and couldn't do anything, couldn't control any function of her body or anything. And he cared for her all the way through. and loved her and gave himself to her. And he ends the book. When he wrote the book, she hadn't passed away. She has since passed away, but she hadn't. He says this at the end of the book. 20 years ago, Muriel and I began a journey into the twilight. It's midnight now, at least for her. Sometimes I wonder when the dawn will break. Even the dread of Alzheimer's disease isn't supposed to attack so early or torment so long. Yet in her silent world, Muriel is so content, so lovable. I sometimes pray, please, Lord, could you let me keep her a little longer? If Jesus took her home, how I would miss her gentle, sweet presence. Yes, there are times when I get irritated, but not often. It doesn't make sense. Besides, I love to care for her. She's my precious. I'm sorry I'm emotional, but I love this story. Because for me, this is the fairy tale. I don't want to go through what they went through, but I want to love like they love. And that only happens when the gospel, when Jesus is the center of your life, and you are on a journey together, you can face whatever dragons. We're going to close this service with a video and then a special time for you. And I just want to challenge you, live for nothing less than that. Pursue Jesus together. Till death do you part, where God's joined, let no man separate.